This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with composer Jakob Eisenbach. It's really great to meet you and have a chance to talk with you about your soundtrack for Tikal, Night of the Blood Moon.
Yes, very nice. Thanks for having me. I'm very honored to be here.
It's such an interesting experience. It's really an experience more than, say, a game. The experience is set in the ruins of a Mayan temple, and you're with a group of people in kind of a big open airy space, and everyone's got a VR headset, and you're on your way to unravel some mysteries in a Mayan temple. And so what is different about the music for this than, say, a traditional game?
That's a very interesting question, because I think the biggest difference to traditional games, where they have the question, like, what is a traditional game, you know? Like,
there's... Well, sure. There's kind of no such thing, I guess, now.
Yeah, no. But I guess like console games or games you play on a computer, I think that's... So the biggest difference is that there's much less story time. So it's more like a short film. It's not like you have hours of gameplay, like 10 or what most games nowadays have. So it's like 30 minutes. And in these 30 minutes, it's not always interactive. I mean, it's most of the time it's interactive, but there's also like non-linear gameplay, which means that the game engine waits for input by the players. And that time, so the music has to take that into account. So it has to be composed like in a short film or like in a movie.
Like more filling a cutscene, that kind of thing, more?
Yeah, but like a cutscene that can stop at some points and then it just moves. So it's not finished, but you're in the cutscene and then you stay in the cutscene. And then if you do the right thing, it's going on. I think there's a few games like that, but not too many.
Yeah. Does the music play continuously through the whole experience, or are there moments where you just have like the sound design and giving people just a moment to kind of be in that space?
So when the game starts, it's only sound design, because it's very overwhelming. That's the thing, like most people never played VR still to this day. It's still such a new thing. And then they're the first time in VR and they need like a couple minutes to be like, oh my God, I have my hands, I have my feet. Oh my God, my friends are here with me as well.
So, yeah, the first time I stepped out, I was just standing there looking around and around, and somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, your turn is over now.
Really? Yeah, that's some people want to stay there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you have to give those people this moment where they just enter the world. And then if that was music already, they'd be completely overwhelmed. But the music also has the role of masking the real world environment as well, as not only storytelling. So it is continuously.
Wow. It must have been such an interesting project to work on. And the setting itself, I'm sure, gave you a lot of ideas, set in Central America with Mayans. And so what sort of music did you listen to for kind of ideas or like research to get the great sound that you did?
So the idea behind the music was that we incorporate the Hollywood feel, like this epic storytelling, but also this strange, unknowing character which you would have if you be in a culture like the Mayan culture. So I was mixing music from the late Romantic. I don't know, Franz Schreker is one big influence.
Sure. Yeah.
Do you know him? Yeah, most people have never heard of him, but his chamber symphony was, like, it had this very strange but mystical vibe, but not too epic at the same time. But then also Anton Bruckner for the big Hollywood orchestra size. Yeah, Anton. I mean, I'm so lucky to be in Zurich. I have a lot of friends in the Tonhalle Orchestra, which is...
Oh, yeah, that's a fabulous orchestra.
Yeah, they have like Paavo Järvi is like a very famous conductor, very, very talented man. And I go there anytime I have the chance. But this, of course, has a lot of influence in my music as well, when you just see those people playing the music on that level.
Yeah, for sure. Having access to that, because they play such a wide range of music, and, you know, from contemporary to, you know, the really traditional things you expect to hear, like Beethoven and Bruckner and that kind of thing. So
yeah, and what's very amazing is that in the recent years they also invite composers that are still alive. So, but yeah, also for like the foreign part, I used, it's actually kind of blasphemic, but I also combined Arabic instruments with Balinese gamelan music and also with Mayan culture. So it's not just the Central American music, it's in general, music that sounds strange for European or Western ears.
And it gives it a real wash of, it's kind of unidentifiable. I mean, the Middle Eastern instruments, a lot of composers use them in games, which is neat, but not in a full orchestra setting like this. So that's really cool. And the gamelan sound, I've been a fan of that like forever. It's just so interesting the way it shifts in and out of phase. And the Mayan instruments too are really interesting. And what were some of the challenges about having them work with an orchestra, like with a Western scale and stuff? Were there any tricks to getting them to all play together nicely?
So I recorded the special instruments like separately. So I had to pitch shift a lot of them, especially Suling, Duduk, and some of the metal instruments as well. But that was like one core of the whole instrumentation. There's not a lot of metal in it. It's only those gamelan sounds, but they're not in the orchestra score. They're like separately. They're not on soundtrack release, but I could play them later if you want. And so I was thinking, okay, Mayan culture, they did not have metal yet. They were like in the old, they were using wood and stone all the time. That's why I was like, okay, the percussion group has to be like that. No metal at all, only drums and self-made kind of instruments. And the scales of the orchestra is actually Balinese pentatonic scales. Especially the main theme is in the background. It's always pentatonic from the gamelan tradition. It's very, very nice. Béla Bartók is a huge influence for that. He was moving around in Hungary and Bulgaria, and he was collecting traditional folk songs, and he was analyzing what kind of scales they was using as well. And he also went to Bali. There's this one piece in the microcosm piano, and it's actually called On the Island of Bali, not From the Island of Bali. And he's using the exact same scales that I was like encountering when I was in Bali myself with a percussion group from there. Yeah.
Wow. I didn't realize that. I knew that, you know, he spent most of his time in Hungary and Romania and Saranac Lake, New York for a little while. I didn't realize he'd gotten that far afield. That's really cool.
Yeah. There's also another composer that is hugely inspired by gamelan music, which was like so obvious when you're in Bali and then they play, but Steve Reich.
Oh, sure. Yeah, definitely.
The minimal music is like completely from there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it adds such an interesting color to the music that you wrote. And I know you wanted to work with the Budapest Arts Orchestra. Why them specifically?
So I could have went overboard. I mean, I went kind of overboard with 110 musicians for a VR game, but I was like, if we go big, we use orchestra, and then if you use orchestra, we're going to compose this properly. We're not going to be like sample strings. It's not going to happen. And the option number one was actually the London Symphony Orchestra. We wanted to go to Air Studios or Abbey Road, but that would have been, I think, 3 or 4 times as expensive. And a good friend of mine was like recording a few times in Budapest, and he knew Miklos, the contractor, and they told me they're super good. They're very, very high quality musicians, very talented, very fast, very professional. And then the choice was clear. We're going to go there.
Wow. And did you have any trouble rounding up 110 of them, or was that Miklos's job to to get everybody together?
It was Miklos's job. I mean, he did it so fast. I was so impressed. I think the biggest section recorded at one time was 79 musicians, like the full tutti with brass. So we did like split sessions. And I know it from recording sessions, or even Tonhalle, like sometimes someone is a little bit late, but in the session, they would make, I think it was like 11:57, and they were like, okay, we're going to make like a 10-minute break, and on 12:07, everybody was there again. Like not a single person was late. It's, I think it's the Hungarian discipline. Maybe something. Maybe there's something resonating from the old times. I don't know.
Maybe so. I think one of the advantages of using an orchestra like that, that plays together all the time, is it's kind of like watching a big flock of birds. They just know what all of the other players are doing, and they've already got that kind of synthesized and seamless sound together. So it's almost like having one instrument instead of 100 and some individuals.
Mm-hmm, that's so true. Especially the Budapest Art Orchestra, they play... Miklos told me they play, I think, 6 times a week. So they don't rehearse. They just play sight reading. So if your scores are on point, they're going to play exactly what you wrote. And it was the first for me that I could work that fast and have like that much of a performance anyways.
What's it like as a composer to hear an orchestra playing the music that you've pretty much had in your head or just had with samples?
So it's very dangerous because... during the recording, like afterwards it's pretty nice, but during the recording it's very dangerous because you're gonna be impressed by the sheer size of this ensemble in front of you, and you're gonna like everything they play even though they don't play anything right. That's why I literally don't know how it sounds, because it didn't enter the studio. I've been in the recording room the whole time with my headphones. I didn't even use their speakers. I mean, my sound engineer was checking through the speakers, so, but I was only focusing on the performance of the musicians. And then know how it sounds through these headphones, because I did like, I think, 70 recording sessions myself here in Switzerland. And I did not want to be impressed by simply them playing music. So I was very precise. Yeah, yeah. Kind of sad, but I would have loved to enjoy it, but it's like work. You have to be very, yeah.
Sure. I mean, what kind of conversations did you have with the conductor ahead of time to tell him or to guide him for the kind of sound that you wanted?
I brought my own conductor. He's a very good friend of mine. We worked together a couple of times, and I was going through the music with him. And before, he was marking everything, and he's very fast. That's like the thing, we have like this small music culture here in Switzerland, which is pushing this new standard, which I'm very proud to see. Like, yeah, it's like he's a drummer and he's a conductor and he's also a composer. So he really understands my taste of music. And I also have my own sound engineer with me. So I could like completely trust them. I did not have to talk too much to the conductor. I could just tell him, hey, can you do it like that? Could you do that like that? And everything else, you literally just write into the score. Like the more you write into the score, the less you have to say during the recording session, which is, with that many people, saves a lot of time.
Oh, I can imagine. Especially because in a situation like that, I mean, time really literally is money.
Also, musicians get bored after retake.
Sure, yeah, of course. tell me about the percussion section that you lined up, because that adds so much weight and it's just such an interesting sound, and it really helps kind of remind people, I think, that they're in these massive stone structures.
So this is if you ever need a percussion group, I think the recording room in Budapest is perfect. Like, the orchestra is very nice, but I mean, obviously Abbey Road is having a little bit different sound, I would say. But if you want to really go for percussion, I think in Budapest is awesome. The instruments they have were so high quality, and Miklos found every instrument. I texted him, he actually went to find this gamelan rhythm instrument. It's called ketung, and it's when you hear gamelan music, you always have like the conductor. They don't have like someone conducting, but they have like this one person that's doing like ding 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 ding, and then everybody else does this rhythm shifts and rhythm phases above that metric. And I wanted to have that in the score as well. It's like when you listen to the music, you can always hear this one metronome type instrument. And I told him, yeah, it would be awesome to have one of those in the percussion group as well. And he got that. I think it took him like 3 or 4 weeks, but he literally got that instrument for me and was...
and not only getting the instrument, but somebody to play it too. So
yes, so the percussionists were also very, very precise, very good at improvising as well. And I think we had like taikos, low taikos, djembes, zurdos, and then some toms, and of course mirankasa.
Wow, it's just such an incredible, powerful sound. I mean, and it really suits the shots that I've seen of the game. It really suits that, because you are in this massive, massive structure. So you needed something that had that kind of weight and allowed the space for that to really impress people who were doing this.
The percussions were the gamelan section. I think this was the interesting idea that I had, that I have like this Western orchestra, but with the gamelan percussion group behind it.
Yeah, it's in a really amazing sound. And speaking of sound, you were the sound designer for this project as well. So did you find, you know, sounds in the natural world that you were able to incorporate? Or what kind of sounds did you decide were important to, you know, give a sense of place?
So when you start the game, you're on a temple, like on the roof of the temple in the jungle, and this is very important that you have to, like, sound design in VR can be binaural, which means you can track your head. And I mean, I can go into the technical stuff later, but one very important key element of the sound design is that you lead the way how the audiences look, like what they're looking, because you have 360 degrees of free movement. And if the scene's taking place somewhere, you have to do something with the sound design to get them moving their head into the right direction. Like in the cinema, you always sit and you always look in the front. Also, when you play a computer game, you always look on the screen. But in this VR environment, you can look anywhere you want. And so when you play the game, when it starts, you have at first just the jungle sounds, some small insects around you. So you're like discovering what's around you. And you're like, oh my God, we're in VR. Ha, ha, ha. And then there's like this swarm of birds flying over your head. And you're like, whoa, there's birds. And then you look in the right direction. Then the game starts and the moon is rising and the music starts as well.
That's so awesome. Yeah, let's talk about the directional sound, the binaural and stuff, because that's a challenge that regular games don't have. And so, and the music can be binaural too, although it doesn't sound like maybe you did that with this. But what do you do to make the music have that 360 aspect? Is it the way the sound is recorded? Or do you go out with like binaural headphones and record sounds? Or
I had a, during the recording session, we actually had an Ambisonics microphone as well, because I really wanted to try that out. But here's the thing, most people play games and like most people watch movies and they don't realize there's music. So you really have to go take a step back and understand what's the, why is there music in the first place? And music flying around your head is cool on a technical way, but it's not storytelling important. And if you have two system levels of perception on the audio side, like one level where there's no movement going on, but if you move your head, your headphones gonna be with you all the time, so the music is static. But if then there's the second layer of binaural sounds, which is the sound design, they literally give you the sense of location and you move around. So you want to split them in general. I mean, of course you can intertwine those two levels, but to really separate like sound design, ambience and all this stuff from the music, you want to have like one thing which is completely binaural and location based, and if you go closer it's going to get louder, if you move your head away it's going to get quieter and stuff like that. But for the storytelling part, you want to have like only stereo music. And then of course it's nice to have stems or small instruments being in both worlds. But if you don't separate those two worlds, it just becomes a mess, kind of. I mean, of course, it would be nice to have like all this, but it's too experimental and people don't, they're not yet ready for that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, yeah. One composer that I talk with is the way he views it is the music is always sort of in the player's head anyway. So it doesn't have to necessarily be binaural. And so
that's the thing. Like, if it's in your head, it's not location based around you, like the sound design. So if I would talk to you in the game and I would look away, you'd get quieter. If you walk behind the wall, your voice would get like damped down, which is was a lot of technical stuff to make that happen. Because literally when I started sound designing it, I was like, okay, let's find some online forums and people that did this. Oh, wait, nobody did this. Yeah, literally, no, like there wasn't much in 2017. There wasn't like almost nothing. All the technical stuff was there, but it was like Ambisonics, and most VR games were using Ambisonics as a standard for the people that don't know what it is, it's literally you have a virtual set of channels around you that when you move your head, you have like this 360 degrees field of sound. But the problem with that is if you move, this is going to stay with you. So if you have a bird like here and you go 10 steps in that direction, the bird is still here. what we needed is like, you don't only want to move your head and the bird is there. But if you go away from it, it gets like more reverberant, gets quieter. If you go behind the wall, it's gone. So yeah, there was a lot of technical stuff to figure out how to pull it off. And that's the funny thing. My developers did. This is cool. Like if you work in a game studio, I mean, I worked in the game studio with them for the sound design part, and you can just talk to your developers, and if they have the time, they're going to write the script. And that was fun.
I bet. You've done a few projects now for True VR, the studio that's producing this experience. And so over the course of the projects, I mean, what have you kind of learned to do better or learned to do more easily so that each time you do a new project for them, you're kind of like right up to speed?
So the biggest thing I learned in the collaboration with True VR is literally understanding your audience, because I was coming from a academic music university, and if I would like, even if I play that score to them, they will tell me like, not all of them, but like some people would tell me, yeah, it's like very mainstream, you know, you use like these typical choir things and the fat brass and all of that. And I'm like, yeah, I know, it's music for that, and it's like for that audience, it's for that setting. It wants to remind people of this huge feelings they had when they watched, I don't know, Lord of the Rings or whatever. And this is what I really learned in the collaboration with them, that I don't have to put my ego into the music. I have to understand what people are looking for and what impact they want to feel. So this kind of gave me an idea of what environment I'm composing for and what level of quality it needs. So you can, you know, because you can always go over the top. Could be much more in depth musical wise, but then there's also just like a VR game, you know? I think, yes. So I really had to understand this balance between like the commercial side and also like the artistic approach. I mean, I have my standard, of course, but only pushing your standards and not understanding what the game studio is actually looking for. Yeah, that was like some interesting conversations.
Well, you know, ultimately what made this kind of artistically satisfying for you to do?
I think in the end that I'm very happy with how it sounds. Like I'm very happy with the quality it turned out to be, because most of the projects I did never reached the level of quality I wanted to aim for because of budget. This was lucky with them because those VR arenas are so expensive. I mean, I don't know. I don't know like how much budget there was for the US arenas, but it's like 5 to 6 figures sometimes, depending on how much. Yeah, and then putting a few bucks on top for the music isn't that. That's why we recorded the orchestra, which is very lucky for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because normal games do use like super low on budget and looking for, yeah, do we really need music? Can't we go on Audio Jungle and get that from there?
that's so cool. It sounds like it was a really interesting project to work on and a lot of fun. And Jakob, it's been great to talk with you about it. And I hope we get a chance to talk soon, because I'm sure you've got other things in the hopper that'll be coming out eventually.
I do. I mean, we have to wait until the pandemic is really over, because this project really was getting under the rock, because you can't play it at home. You have to go there and you're in a room with people for at least half an hour. So it's not very COVID friendly. So.
But little by little, people will emerge. And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think they have like very good safety measures in all the arenas, but yeah. So the launch of that project was like delayed for almost a year. So it's only getting released right now for real. Then the next game is coming as well, but we don't know yet when. But of course, if it's there, I'm going to come back to you.
That'd be so awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was so nice.
Thank you. I really had a great time talking with you.